All right, broadcast is started.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jonathan. We will open the Hood River City Council meeting of August 24th at 6 p.m. And I will call it to order. We do have two people who would like to speak tonight, and we'll have them speak during business from the audience. They're going to speak on a subject we're going to have later. From what they had indicated later in the meeting, but we'll go ahead and let them speak now. And Susan Crowley was the first person to sign up this evening. So Jonathan, if you could invite her into the meeting so she can speak to us for 3 minutes.
I can see you guys. Can you see me? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. So I'm speaking on the Parks and Rec Master Plan that you're talking about later tonight. And I wanted first to congratulate you all because I tracked the process as closely as I could through the different meetings that happened and know how hard people worked and how many different balls were in the air and how many different agencies had to concur. So I think it was a great job of cooperative work. Did you happen to get a link to a New York Times article that I sent this morning? You did. Okay.
Yes.
If you haven't yet had a chance to look at it, it's an interesting piece, in part researched by a Portland State University professor, who's a kind of an expert in the field. It's on the urban heat island effect and what happens in cities as they get more and more dense and more covered with concrete. And it specifically focuses on the extent to which what that does is it disadvantages already disadvantaged communities. So that tends to hit the poorer neighborhoods the hardest because they have the fewest parks and the fewest green areas. And so I wanted to encourage you, especially in this age of global warming, this is an increasing issue, to think about it's not just developing the city more densely that is your mission right now, but it is enough green space to offset the negative impacts of that. It has to go hand in hand. And that's indeed part of what land use planning is all about in Oregon. It's balancing those different factors. And green space is so critical, and please don't let it fall through the cracks. This is an excellent start, but my one concern is, as you know, of course, it's just recommendatory. Nothing makes anybody do anything, which in a way puts the burden more squarely on your shoulders. Because then you don't have, when you're dealing and trying to negotiate with developers, you don't have any leverage that your ordinances give you because they're not mandatory, right? So I hope that you keep that in mind, that it's a balancing act and that green space, and especially in this age when townhouses are basically filling lot line to lot line and just go pushing as far of the rules as they can, it's important to remember that green space is critical. The other thing to remember, I think, is that Parks and Rec has so much on its plate right now, and it's such a huge concern. It's got a pool that's falling apart. And at some point they were talking, I don't know what the situation is now with the economy and flux, but they were talking about a $20 million pool complex that is going to soak up a lot of their energy, resources, time, and that'll be less time that they have available to develop new parks, especially in the city. So it's going to fall on your shoulders. So please continue the good work and don't drop the ball on this. Keep the focus going, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Susan, for your comments. Our second speaker is Josh Seba.
Josh, you are promoted to speaker via your phone.
I think he might have to hit star six in order to unmute. Is that true?
That may be true. There may be a button in the telephone app itself.
There you go.
Okay, I think. I'm unmuted.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Josh. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, I want to comment that, like Susan, I think you guys did a fabulous job. It's a really thorough study, and it's really important that you did this, so thanks so much. What I wanted to talk about tonight was that in going through the draft, I noticed that in the mapping, Wacoma Park doesn't show as a green park or isn't labeled in any single map. And Wacoma Park is the oldest park in the city, dedicated in the early 1900s. It was part of a donation, It was development by the Coes of the first subdivision in Hood River back in the early 1900s and designated as a park. So it is a park. It was deeded that way. And I don't, is there any way that you guys could get it on the maps as a park so everybody would know that?
We'll look into that, Josh.
Okay, thank you very much. So that was my first question. And my second is that it's also Wacoma Park is not listed in very many of the charts, I think mostly because it's designated as open space. A lot of that, there just isn't a lot of detail of how to identify it. But I would like you guys to consider, whoever's doing this, consider taking Wacoma Park out of open space and making it instead a neighborhood park. I think it has probably more attributes of a neighborhood park than it does as open space. And I wanted the council to just be aware that for quite a few years now, volunteers from the neighborhood have been maintaining the park, pulling invasives. The city was kind enough to put in a water system so that we can actually water it. And we can actually water the endangered white oaks in the park, which are quite valuable. And that it provides really a lot of great habitat for local birds and animals in the area. And I think that is probably as great a purpose for parks as, anything else. It has a great bench that was donated by Greg Colt at the top of 19th Montello inside the park. I would just like people to consider the park and something that's more of a neighborhood park than just open space. So those are the two comments I would make, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate your taking the time.
Okay.
All right. We just had, I just wanted to make sure, I wanted to check with that we didn't have any other speakers that I've left out. No.
Okay. I don't believe so. Jen? Mayor, I don't believe so.
No. Nobody else. Okay.
No more speakers.
Okay. So now we'll go ahead and go into our work session and open our work session at 6:08. Do we have any agenda additions or corrections?
We do not, Mayor.
Okay. So our first discussion item is the Hood River Cares Act allocation. So is Rachel or Will, were you going to talk about this?
Yeah, Will is going to make the presentation. Thanks, Mayor.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and City Council. First, I wanted to start off with what this isn't. And this isn't the $250,000 of local property tax funds that we discussed at the May 11th meeting. That's from a one-year suspension of urban renewal monies. And that's a bump to our general property tax dollars. It's going to be a bump to property tax dollars for all of the overlapping districts. And that is 100% discretionary. It doesn't have to be spent. It can just be retained by the city if we want to. But in the adopted budget, we have a line item in case we want to use it for relief programs. That's not what I'm talking about today. Today is the CARES Act money allocated to local governments. This money can be used in the same way for COVID relief programs, for economic relief programs. But one major difference is if it's not spent by December 30th, it needs to be returned to the U.S. Treasury. So the League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, and Special Districts Association all worked with the governor's office to create allocations for all the cities and states and special districts. And the city of Hood River got allocated about $300,000, of which we've spent about $100,000. So that money is not spent, it's just gonna go away. And if we are able to spend it effectively, there's a possibility that if other cities and states across the state, across Oregon, don't spend theirs, there could be even more. So 300K is about, as should be thought of as the floor, not the maximum. It's potential there could be more money. We've spent about 100,000 so far since March. And that was, we did a school lunch program during spring break. We've had to buy a lot of computers and other equipment to allow our staff to continue operations in a remote setting. We've purchased signage, lots of communications. For another example is the temporary fencing around the park, around Waterfront Park, around some of the assets there. So anything that we wouldn't have spent money on if it wasn't for the pandemic, we've been able to charge it to this fund and seek reimbursement. So we've seen, but much of the upfront costs are now spent, and we don't think that there's gonna be a need for significant additional spend for direct city expenditures. Will be some, and that also is prone to the risk of if we see a significant outbreak amongst our staff, that can change the situation as well. But we also already have that property tax bump as well that we have decided to set aside until the fall. So some of the considerations are basically the same, and I'll go over them real quick, but they're the same from our May 11th meeting. And one of the biggest pieces is if we want to spend outside of the city, have to think about administrative capacity. And this was not a program in our work plan. We don't have an economic development position. You know, all of us are fully allocated with our time carrying forward the operations of the municipal government. And that has become all the more challenging doing so in a remote environment and during COVID. So if we want to administer any type of program that's going to be complex in its criteria, requires a lot of research, weighing of different options, that's going to need to be something that we need to outsource because it's not within staff capacity and current workload. And honestly, not within our expertise as well. Choosing one nonprofit or one economic development or economic relief program over another. So an example of what would be feasible for the city is setting a flat dollar amount and then reimbursing businesses on a cost reimbursement basis for COVID readiness. You know, no judgment involved, just bring in receipts, we cut you a check. That's basically the level that we can do in-house. Another consideration would be the degree of discretion that you want to give to staff to act quickly and dynamically to the need. You know, we've seen childcare pop up or lack of childcare pop up as we've gotten closer to the school year, and the school districts have communicated out what their reopening plans are. And so the ability to react to those emergent needs. There's a direct tension between oversight and council direction versus being quick and flexible. And just, it's good to think about that tension and give direction about where the council's values are. And, you know, and a piece of that too is, as I've been working, you know, as I've gotten the word out that the city is looking to spend this money, my experience working with nonprofits has been, well, are we going to get the money? I don't want to create a program and spend a lot of time thinking through the details of a program if I don't know the money is actually going to come. So you kind of get into a bit of a chicken or the egg situation that can slow you down, where if we had just broad discretion to move forward within guidelines, we would be able to reasonably assure a nonprofit, yes, give us a good proposal, give us a good program, and the money is there. So with those considerations being said, I did wanna speak about a few options and ideas that I've been made aware of as we've been continuing to talk to our local partners. By no means the full universe of needs that are out there, the need is great. And we are very open to hearing about other needs and that, we may not know about. I would also note that we have Lindbergh and Sarah Kellums and Ashley Huckabee May, who are associated with some of these ideas. And so when we get into questions and answers, they'll be available as well to talk about those. So one of the ideas is a grant to Child Care Partners housed out of Columbia Gorge Community College for them to use their staff to act as expert navigators to help existing child care facilities meet new healthcare guidelines, expand if they want to, and help new new providers who may want to get into this business have them have a resource to go to help them navigate through the process of all the licensing and rules that they're going to need to go through, and then also have some of the money pay for those costs. So for PPE, for their licenses, for zoning reviews, all that kind of work. Another idea is purchasing modular shelters so that the warming shelter can continue to serve its population over the winter in a socially distanced fashion. And at the very end of your packet, you'll see a request for a letter of support where the shelter is already looking for grantors to help them with this, and we could be one part of that puzzle and contribute. Another idea is just and this is what many other small cities are doing, are just direct grants to particularly affected industries. And in our local area, one of the most affected industries is our hotels. And so it's quite allowable to just choose a dollar amount and divide it out based on a formula such as a flat number of payments per room, maybe with a minimum grant amount that would cover local property managers. An idea floated on May 11th was to work through the United Way Response Fund. And this really gets into that aspect of administrative feasibility and staff expertise. We don't have it, they do. They have the expertise, they do this every week. They have a community response fund, and they've been funded by lots of individuals as well as from large corporations. I believe they received a big donation from Google, and they churn that fund over quickly, and they look at what is the emergent need right now, and where's that delta between need versus resources. So there's a lot of high profile nonprofits out there that have extreme needs, but also have quite a bit of resources flooding into them right now. So what the United Way does is look at who has the need and doesn't have the resources in this current environment. And puts the money in where that delta is. There's also a lot of cities doing specific grants to small businesses, and that could be through the Chamber of Commerce or Mid-Columbia Economic Development District. MCED has a small business grant program in place right now that's funded with state of Oregon money, not federal money. And that has had strings tied to it that has made it difficult to get the money out the door. And so if we wanted to plug into that with additional CARES Act money that had fewer restrictions, that might help to unleash and help some of the businesses that aren't fitting into the current grant. And then lastly, is just direct assistance to individuals to help them pay for utilities. Quite surprisingly to me, our utilities were, even though we issued a state of emergency, I believe in March, that allowed people not to pay their utilities without incurring any interest or penalties. But I think because of the enhanced unemployment benefits, we saw people stayed up on their utilities. Actually, we saw a lot of people make progress on their municipal court fines. So people took that as an opportunity to get up to date on their debts with the city. But just in this last month, our accounts receivable balance, and that's basically the sum total of all outstanding bills unpaid, spiked. We only have 1 month of data, but if that continues, I think that's an early warning sign that individuals are starting to fall behind on their monthly bills. And so the CARES Act would certainly be available to help provide small grants to individuals to help pay utility bills. The key to that is it shouldn't be directly administered by the city. The Treasury guidance is very serious about not using this for revenue replacement. So the League of Oregon Cities has advised that if we want to do utility assistance, it should be administered through a third party. and I think the Mid-Columbia Community Action Council, the Housing Authority, some entity like that would be good. And it needs to be usable on all types of utilities, electric, heating oil, not just water, sewer, storm, so that we can clearly demonstrate that this isn't a revenue replacement strategy for the city. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions. Well, I'll say, so what we're looking for is direction that gives us clear path as staff to know where the council's coalescing on, and so we can carry out and hopefully put this money where you and administer it in a way that you feel comfortable with and that addresses your goals. And so with that, I'll answer any questions you have. And again, I have Paul Lindberg from United Way. I see Ashley Huckabee May as the participants, and Sarah Collins from the Warming Shelter there as attendees, and they're available to answer questions as well.
So if counselors, if you'd like to raise your hand, if you'd like to, questions for Will, let's just do that first. And then we'll, after we get done with questions for Will, we can start discussion or additional questions for the people that are on the call that might be able to help us. So does anyone have a question for Will or someone else? Megan?
Well, it's for someone else, so if anyone had a Will question first. But.
Gladys, you have a question for Will? Let's do that first, and then we'll go to Megan.
Yeah, thank you, Will, for that information. I had a question about the small business aid. I've received several emails from constituents whom have owned businesses, but the business has been less than 5 years. And I'm not sure, I'm not too familiar with MCED and how they offer assistance to businesses, but will this money be allowed for a business who's been only open for a year at the very most? Will there be any restrictions as far as how long the business has been established?
No, there's no restrictions like that in the Treasury guidance. One, I'd say the most salient restriction is this can't pay for anything that a previous CARES Act program mm-hmm. has paid for. So for instance, the Paycheck Protection Program. So if they've already paid salary with Paycheck Protection Program, they're going to have to pay something else with this. Okay. But other than that, it's very, very open and very much at the City Council's discretion where you want to target this.
Yeah. What about loss of income, like priority on businesses who have lost the most amount of money?
Absolutely. This can't be revenue. The city is the only one who can't make up revenue on this. But if you target aid to this hit, you can use the percentage of revenue lost as a qualification.
Okay. Thank you. Those were the two questions I had for you. Thank you to Paul, Ashley, and Sarah for joining this call as well.
Megan?
So with the United Way Community Response Fund, I guess, I don't know like how many nonprofits we actually have locally, but are there sideboards of the nonprofit? I guess, what are the sideboards of can every nonprofit apply, or do they need to be working in the local community, or what can actually be covered in costs or not within that fund?
Yeah, it needs to address COVID. It needs to be and necessary is pretty, sounds legalistic, but it's really as you deem necessary, but necessary because of response to COVID-19. That could be even, a nonprofit is shaky and you want to make sure that a certain nonprofit makes it through the pandemic. That could be considered a necessary expense. But it should have a nexus to COVID-19 and responding to COVID-19, and that something we wouldn't have done if it wasn't for COVID-19.
Yes, the second or first part of that was and I don't know if this is something we have here, but if there's a nonprofit that is based here but is, say, working in another continent, would they qualify for this community response fund, or is it only for nonprofits working here?
I think it's, and it has to be connected to our need to respond to COVID. I don't think we can do international aid with it.
Right. Or, I mean, that was an example of, but it would be nonprofits that are doing work in Hood River.
Well, they could be doing work elsewhere, but what we would be funding would be somehow connected to work here. So if they were doing work in, we don't have to, they could be doing work in Europe and the United States, but what our grant is to do some sort of response activity in the United States.
And specifically Hood River?
You know, it's federal money, so I can seek clarification on that, but.
Well, I guess whatever the money's allowed to do, does this, the actual United Way Fund, do they have rules around that? And I guess I'm maybe asking Paul.
Okay.
Hi. Sure, thanks for the question and thanks for allowing me to be here. Yes, so we have got, the fund is set up to serve the region that the United Way serves. So it's Hood River, Wasco, Sherman counties, and Klickitat and Skamania. And so basically any nonprofit that serves anybody in those communities or in the region is eligible, and then they have to be impacted by COVID. And we've got funding in the past, well, Google gave us a grant and they wanted to restrict it just to Wasco County. And so we did that. Columbia Gorge Health Council made a donation and they wanted it primarily restricted to Hood River and Wasco counties. So we're able to do that as well. So we're fully able to, you know, put those geographic restrictions on it.
Thank you, Paul.
Additional questions from anyone? Mark and then Tim. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks for being on, everybody. Question for Paul and then one, a quick one for Sarah. With the Community Response Fund, are you working with nonprofits that we all know and love already? I mean, what programs in Hood River County are being funded now with this fund? And you know, if your letter was nice but very minimal, give us a sense of what kind of things we would fund if we gave to that there.
Sure.
I'll just ask my question for Sarah and then you guys can fight it out. So Sarah, these module shelters, is that sort of the plan for this winter, or are you still working on the plan? If we fund modular shelters now, is there a chance that you're gonna choose a different path and have we funded something that isn't directly helping this year? So those are my two questions.
So Paul, do you want to go ahead first?
Sure. So the fund has funded, we've awarded 31 grants so far in 14 weeks of 14 rounds. And out of those 31, 14, I think, have been focused on food, and 9, I don't have it in front of me, I was trying to pull it up. 9 have been focused on organizational capacity, and 5 or 6 have been focused on safety, which included PPE in the beginning, domestic violence support more recently. And so it is, to your question, it's who you would expect to a certain extent. It's been the food bank, Meals on Wheels, and in other communities it was Backpack for Kids. And here it was, we provided some funding for Gorge Grown to help with their programming. And then so Gorge Grown is leading a summer meals program that was sort of bookending the school district. So there was food, the Hood River Adult Center. And ironically, it wasn't just food itself that we were asked to pay for. It was some of the materials that they needed because their demand was so much higher. The food part wasn't the issue. It was for Meals on Wheels, for example, they needed more containers in order to be able to deliver more meals. And so we helped out with that. And so it's a, it's a kind of a moving target in a sense. They're grants, so they submit the application. We turn it around in typically less than 10 days, and then we ask for a report when they've expended the funding. And a couple organizations have come back twice. They're able to do that if the need is still there. So it's really those that you would expect that are addressing the most common needs in the community. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And I know there's a few people that are on the phone, and so I can see everyone and their names, but the people that are on the phone can't. And so I'm just going to try and remember to say who is speaking, because they may not be able to see. But that was Paul Lindberg representing United Way. So Sarah Kellums, who is working with the warming shelter, will be going next.
Mm-hmm. Hello, this is Sarah. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Council, for your thoughtful consideration about how to allocate these funds. Mark, in response to your question, we are still working to finalize our plan for warming shelter operations, and we have made the decision that our operations will be a non-congregant model this winter, which I think I explained in the notes I shared to you, but that means that instead of a shared breathing space or bunk room that we've had in the past, we will be minimizing shared breathing space for our shelter guests to prioritize meeting health and safety guidelines, and then minimizing exposure to and transmission of the virus, not only for the guests, but our community at large. The pallet shelter model is our top priority at this time. We are comparing two different models, and they have similar costs. So if you were to allocate the CRF funding, a portion of that, to Hood River Shelter Services, what I can guarantee you tonight is that it would 100% be used to support non-congregant shelter. Our board has not made a decision yet about the pallet shelters, and we do plan to make that decision in the next several weeks. Can I answer any other detail around that for you?
I think for now that answers my question. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah, I have a question about that. Mm-hmm. So you're saying you're going to support non-congregate. So if you don't go with the pallet shelter model, mm-hmm. would the money be used potentially for hotel rooms?
Yes, that is the other model we're looking at. And just to kind of, as briefly as I can, lay out some of the considerations that we are weighing at this time. The Gorge Outreach Program, I would say, was overall very successful this spring, and that was the hotel-based model. However, there are some significant unanticipated costs associated with hotel models. For example, at the Hood River Inn by the bridge, several rooms needed to have carpeting and beds replaced. That added up to many thousands of dollars. And so that's a significant cost that would be difficult to plan for. The other factor is not knowing how long this pandemic will last. So if we were to purchase the pallet shelters, we would have the opportunity of using them a second year if we were still needing to socially distance at that time. Whereas if we went with the hotel-based operations, we would have lost those funds, and we would not have the opportunity to reuse them.
So if you actually got the pallet structures and found a place to put them, because I assume you haven't found a place yet, from what you'd said in your letter, is that you don't know if you're gonna have a place to put them. But if you got them, you would be using them year after year after year. I mean, not just 2 years, they could be used into the future, correct?
First of all, in response to the location search, we do have a short list of feasible location sites. I am not ready to publicly share them at this time, but we do have some really strong leads on feasible sites that we are excited about and that we feel would be a good fit, not only for our operations, but for the community. And then as far as long-term, I really don't see the pallet shelters as a permanent operations for our warming shelter. However, they could be used for several years as a COVID response if needed. They also, they've been used for other purposes in different locations around the country. So there is a possibility that they could be used for another community need apart from the shelter. And we'd be open to sharing that resource in our community.
Okay, thank you. Additional questions from other Councilor Tim?
Thanks, Mayor. Question for Will. Will, in the context of the federal money, is us dispersing the money to like United Way, does that constitute spending it?
Yes, that would be, they would be a sub-recipient. So they would be a sub-recipient and then needs to be spent by getting to the end user. It would not be.
So they still have to spend the money by?
December 30th.
Mm-hmm. So I guess kind of a follow-up question, I'm not sure whether that's a question for you or for Paul. And I think it gets to kind of the dynamic of how much money we put where. Because if we allocate a certain amount of money and then the United Way doesn't get sufficient applications for that money somehow, then how do we actually deal with that in a kind of like a real-time fashion?
Paul, do you want to talk about how quickly you turn over funds and what sort of the magnitude of need out there is and versus how much funds are available?
Yeah, thanks for the question. The fund was originally set up in order to be just as rapid response as we could to the needs as they came along. And in the first couple of cycles, we had a lot of requests. And then sort of evened that leveled out. And now we've been at about, the amount that goes out per round has been about somewhere between probably an average is probably 8,000 to 10,000. And so given the needs that we've seen and how it's going, I don't have any doubt that we could allocate this money by the end of the year. I know there's just going to be more needs that come up as we move into the fall and with school opening and so many nonprofits that typically serve schools trying to figure out what they do. I don't think there's going to be any trouble. If we didn't have enough applications to allocate all the funds by December 31st, there isn't anything that says that fund couldn't accept an application from the warming shelter and allocate the funding directly there. That's, or to anybody else, if you guys said, you know what, just give the rest of it to the food bank, we could certainly do that. From the response fund angle, there, I don't foresee any trouble allocating that funding by the end of the year.
So Paul, as long as you're on the phone, do you get a feeling that the food banks and stuff are actually forecasting their need through the winter? Are they looking forward and kind of requesting money that will actually get them through the pandemic, or is it kind of like based on it's like, oh, we have a shortage now?
You mean so far what we've seen?
Well, yeah, and if I guess kind of a follow up to that, is there any way to encourage them to forecast?
The second part, I have no doubt that they're trying to forecast.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm fairly confident that they're doing that. And in terms of the first part of the question, the funding that they asked for and that we allocated moved in and out pretty quickly, as far as we know. And the one thing that I know about food banks, and I just want to be very cautious about this, is they haven't asked us, none of the food banks have asked us for funding since those early rounds. And I think part of that is because there has been such a significant response to the need for food, both from community at the community level, the state level, and the federal level, that from an actual food perspective, again, this is a point in time, but they seem to be okay right now. But moving forward, it is difficult to say because we just don't know what the landscape's going to be, which again is the beauty of the fund, and that's why we set it up, because they're going to need food and they're going to need it quickly. And so let's, you know, have that chicken, as Will said, so when they need the egg, we can solve that problem.
Thank you. I guess that applies to the utility funding too. There's obviously going to be an increased need as we go through the winter. So kind of the same dynamic.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, if you look at that graph in the packet, our outstanding balances spike in the summer, not the winter. And that's probably just a dynamic of that's when people use water. So it's probably maybe the opposite for an electricity or heating oil company. But I just don't have eyes on that side of the utilities.
All right. Thank you.
Additional questions from anyone? Eric?
Thank you, Mayor. I see one of the items for us to consider tonight as a possible recipient of these types of funds is something for the small businesses. And I think if I see Ashley Huckabee's name, sounds like she's on the line. I guess I would just be curious what her view would be of the need in the business community for grant funds. I mean, certainly some of these social needs are certainly going to get some serious attention tonight. I'm just curious what the need is on that side of the ledger.
Thanks, Eric. So having stepped into an interim director role for the chamber at large just in this last week, I will just kind of speak off the cuff here from what I've gathered. And absolutely there's a need. All of our businesses are, well, the majority of our businesses are struggling. As far as which sectors, I need to gather some information on which sectors are being impacted more than others, but there's absolutely a need. I've heard from multiple stakeholders who, you know, have followed council closely throughout the months, and then in the newspaper over the weekend saw the article in regards to this discussion tonight. And I mean, short answer is there's absolute need as far as which sectors those would go to. I would need a bit more time to provide that information to you. So I apologize, I don't have that information tonight.
Thanks, Ashley. Additional questions? Okay, I don't see any. So I, you know, we had a lot of, we had discussion early on in May. This was a great report and the staff report with a lot of different suggestions, and council's read through these in our packet. So I'm sure that everyone has one or two that they might like or are leaning towards. And so I think maybe we should just go around and say what, you know, if we have some ideas, or maybe not a, we aren't gonna come to a 100% for one thing, we're probably gonna come up with two or three different ones that we might all be able to agree on. That's what I'm hoping for anyway. So does anyone wanna go first with their possibilities? Jessica?
Well, it's mostly just some comments first, and then I can share my possibilities. For one, just to clarify the comment from Councilor Rivera, the MCAD grant program that we're administering through Business Oregon does not have a requirement for how long the business has been open. And on terms of the what needs, Councilor Haney's questions about the business needs, I mean, so that's one area where I have, just with my work hat on, can answer. I mean, we've seen the biggest losses have been in hospitality, retail, and restaurants kind of businesses. We've also seen personal services impacted. So, and then offices like dentists and, you know, medical offices like that have all been impacted. And I mean, what we've heard, I think probably a number of us got, or maybe all of us got the email from Flow Yoga, but I what one of the comments that she had made in there was that, you know, the federal funds that came were for the first 8 weeks, and, you know, we're 5 months into this. So basically all the businesses are just bleeding. You know, if a restaurant's operating at a max 50% capacity when the business model is that they would have at least 75% capacity, there's no way that they're not losing money. So that's just kind of some information. And also just to say, I, as just, you know, some, of course, you know, the counselors know some of this. So MCED, if the council did want to go with some kind of business grant program, I would support passing it through the chamber, because actually the chamber is one of, as we've seen from the press release, is one of the local organizations that our community depends on and has been severely impacted by this and has not benefited. Chambers are a 501c6 organization, and they've not been eligible for PPP or EIDL, and they are not eligible for the United Way grants. So I would definitely appreciate if we could pass the business grants through them and then help them with some admin. And then also to, and also then also it doesn't have to go through my employer, which would be good to just avoid that conflict. And then to share, of course, that I do have, my husband and his partners have a small business in the community that I had asked them just their thoughts on, you know, what would be helpful and, you know, if we paid a month rent, that kind of thing. And of course, things like that would be very helpful. But I also want to say that I'm not really interested in creating the details, because I think we have really talented staff. And so what I'm thinking is that we're just kind of shared like the big buckets of where we'd like to give money and then rely on our staff and community partners to come up with the details. I don't really think that's our role. So with that, the hard part is I liked all of the, I kind of liked all of the buckets. One thing that I had heard today was, you know, just in terms of hotel capacity. I know that like the next door has been trying to house farm workers and migrant farm workers with the hotels, and has heard from the hotels in Hood River that they do not have the ability to help them. And so that makes me think that they don't have a need. I know that we had, you know, shut them down earlier in the year. And so if that's, I would like to see if there's a way they could help with the migrant farm worker program. If we did give some relief to them, or just support the hotels through just a business grant program in general, that's not targeted specific to the hotels. So I would say kind of, you know, businesses, the nonprofits, childcare, homeless, and the like the personal utility bills, kind of in that order. Also, because on the childcare, since I still have a floor, of course, with the childcare is one that, you know, the Mid-Columbia Economic Resiliency Team has been focusing on, because it's been prior to COVID, it was a huge need in the area, and post-COVID, it's, as Willow said, it's just gotten worse. And so that's something that I've definitely seen as a barrier for employment in our community. And I think that that's where an area where we could do some good with this money.
So Jessica, I just wanted to, I'm trying to write these down as you're going through these, and you said in this order. So I wanted to make sure I got the order correct and I got everything that you said. So could you just list those one more time for me?
And I also share, I was thinking about if we kind of somehow split up the money and help them all. businesses, nonprofits, childcare, homeless, and the utility payments.
Okay, great. Thanks. Does anyone want to go next? Tim?
Well, thanks, Mayor. I agree that I totally trust the city staff to make the specific decisions about how to allocate the specific resources. But I do think we have, you know, there is a decisions to be made about how much goes where, that I'm not exactly sure how we resolve that. But as far as priorities go, I think my priorities would be towards, for one, making sure people aren't hungry. I guess that would be my number one priority, is that the people have enough food to eat. I would say also shelter, in as much as we can help the homeless population out, because these are like critical needs. If people are out in the cold, in the middle of winter, they die. You know, if people don't eat, they die. And then I guess I would say utilities next. And then, you know, all the rest, you know, I agree with Jessica that all these are admirable goals and programs. As far as the business support, I'm not exactly sure how to determine need and what would be a priority. I mean, who gets what? Who's first in line? So, I mean, I think that that's something that needs to be considered, and maybe it has to do with, I'm not exactly sure how you would determine that, other than, do you have any thoughts on that? Well, I'm just going to ask Will, do you have any thoughts on that?
So we could do, the one thing I mentioned before is direct reimbursement for anything that's necessary for them to reopen. So, glass dividers, PPE, outdoor seating, and just say up to $5,000 each, first come, first serve, bring in receipts, and we reimburse you. That's one option. If we were going to get into a weighing of things, you know, I that's where I'd really need to look to the chamber, I think, and their expertise.
Thanks. I know that's a difficult question.
It is very difficult.
But anyways, you know, again, I think, you know, for me, the critical needs that people don't go hungry and starve, and they have a warm place to live, including the homeless people, are the top of my priority list.
Anyone else? Eric?
Well, sure, Mayor. I just was saying I couldn't hear you, but I'm happy to turn my this into this. I guess I agree with a lot of what I've heard both from Councillor Mehta and Councillor Cunahan. It seems like we should do what we can to have these dollars create the most positive impact for the community as a whole and to be as helpful as they possibly can be. I have some points of discussion, but just to say, I think what my bottom line is, first, if I were to prioritize these bullet points, which, by the way, this is one of the best menus I've seen from staff. So someone put a lot of thought into this, and I appreciate whoever that was. But my top priority would probably be the homeless shelter for number one. Tim made a good point about food. Food isn't expressly listed here, but I will put as number two the United Way Community Response Fund, because it seems like fish is the fallback for them. And I'll just, you know, the point's been made in the memo, the point's been made tonight, but we just really aren't in the business of being nimble and sort of administratively thoughtful in giving away money, but the United Way really is. So we should not reinvent the wheel. And I certainly an organization that I trust. So I would say United Way would be my number two. My number three would be the childcare concept of creating a navigator. So we can perhaps create a groundswell in the community of filling that void. And that seems like something that can be very impactful. And then my fourth would be the individual utility assistance. So I guess why am I not putting the business issues that I see here? Certainly would be open to some kind of idea with the Chamber of Commerce or even the lodgers possibly. I mean, the lodgers, the reason that that's sympathetic to me is they did bear the economic brunt of our very specific order through the early spring, putting them out of business. And so we created that. I mean, for the good of the whole, of course, but we created that. So that would be the reason to do that. But again, it's, I think, lower on the priority list if we're trying to be as impactful as we can be. And my concern about the small business, again, if there is a specific need or an idea, I'm absolutely very open to it. I'm reminded of a comment that was made, I think it was actually in an urban renewal budget committee meeting that someone chimed in, and it just stuck with me, that the problem is we run the risk of playing favorites or having the perception of that, you know, first come, first serve program. My concern would be, we'd be, not intentionally, but the result would be that those who are most connected would have the most benefit. But what we're trying to do is be impactful with our dollars, not necessarily get money to those standing in line first. And we don't want to play favorites. We don't want, you know, restaurants over insurance companies or bike shops over surf shops. It's just really hard for us to allocate fairly. Now, certainly MCAD or better, the chamber would do that better than us, but I'm just, the first come, first serve idea is just not my favorite, because I'm concerned that it will turn, you know, unintentionally into favorites rather than being impactful with our dollars. So again, very open to an idea for supporting our businesses and maybe giving some money to the chamber, but I would focus our dollars on those four priorities that I've listed, and I would try to avoid a first come, first serve program.
Thank you, Eric. Megan?
I also appreciate the menu, but this is a real challenge in that I think all of them, obviously there is need everywhere. You know, some of these could suck up all the money we have and more. So how to decide which is the highest need or which is the best use of the money? It is a challenge. And so I think I kind of did what Tim did of kind of going back to that, the hierarchy of needs of, you know, food, water, shelter, is kind of the base level of we need people to survive this. Ideally I want them to thrive in this, but maybe that's not realistic. And so I kind of step back to that of, like, obviously, you know, providing shelter for folks experiencing homelessness, the utility assistance to both help keep people in their homes because they can, you know, maybe afford rent if their utilities are covered or they have water and heat in the shelter they have. United Way Community Fund, sounds like quite a bit of that has gone to food or safety, you know, certainly things like domestic violence so that your shelter is actually shelter, fairly critical. So kind of that first base level, and then the other ones of certainly childcare, small business aid, all of this is kind of the next level of actually having a job is kind of the next step up. And obviously keeping as many people employed is also critical to keeping people in their homes and fed. So again, I kind of circle back around to there's just so much desperate need. So I guess within all of that, if we're ranking, I would go utility assistance, homelessness, United Way, childcare, small business, lodging. And I also would probably cover I think lodging within the small business aid feels a bit more equitable to me than separating it out if we are doing small business aid. And I think Eric's right. It's a challenge to me if we have, you know, say 100,000 of this goes to that, how do you pick our you know, have it not look like we've chosen our favorite 10 businesses to support or our favorite 20 out of, I'm assuming the at least 100 we have in the city. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't try, but I don't know how to frame that program.
Will, did you have something on that?
I did, yeah. One of your comments, Megan, reminded me of something I was gonna say during my staff report that I think is maybe relates to what you're talking about. 200K could go to one of these and we could be spent. Is the count, while we got 300,000, the county got 720, and they're also wrestling with this. And they have a public health mission, I think, is taking a lot of their time and energy. So if we create a proof of concept, I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that we, that, you know, the county is able to piggyback on us later. So I think we can play that role as well, even with just partial funding of some of these needs.
Thank you, Will. I'll shut up for now, though.
Okay, let's see. Who hasn't gone? Gladys?
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with all of my peers. This is a great selection. All of these would be great to fund everyone. But to rank them, I will start with United Way. Then I would go to homelessness. After that, it would be the individual utility assistance, followed by the small business, childcare, and temporary lodging.
Thank you, Gladys. Mark.
All right. You guys have said everything, so how am I going to babble? I don't quite understand. I really appreciate the discussion. I too have been struggling with how to do a business thing equitably. If you take $50,000, just as an example, and you say $2,000 per, which doesn't seem like very much to me if I was a business, but that's 25 people are going to get benefits of that 50,000. Where if you take $5 lunches that we can provide to people, that's 10,000 meals that we can provide to the low side. I really like that we have such a cool team with the United Way group. So my list goes 120K United Way, 50K shelter services, 50K utility support, and 30K to the child care partnership. And it's for all the stuff that they can do now. I think that, you know, all of the existing child care people, we should give the support. And then we should talk later about how do you recruit new child care people. I think it's not a good idea to try to rush approve child care. So that is a good opportunity that might not fit under COVID the next 5 months kind of thing. So, or that's my personal concern anyway. So 120, 50, 50, 30 in that order.
So you, Mark, you said United Way. What was the second one?
Shelter services.
Shelter. Okay.
And then utility support, then 30K for child care partnership.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. I'm seeing a theme. I'm seeing some themes here. I'm sure the staff has probably been keeping track here, too. And I'm on the same page with pretty much everything everyone else has said. The business grant is a difficult one to do because how do you figure that out? And I think trying to do the most good for the most people for the priority things such as food and shelter, people not getting their utilities shut off or needing to pay for those utilities are important. I think childcare is important because people, if they can go back to work and they don't have childcare, they could be making money, but they can't find childcare. So I do think that's important because it will help people get back to work that can go back to work. So those are basically the same ones that I had, and I'm kind of with kind of a combination of Tim and Eric. And I would say United Way, number one, shelter for the homeless, utilities, and childcare are my top ones. So, you know, I'm not sure how to divide this up, and I want staff to take care of it. You know, I don't think that we need to micromanage it, but I'm seeing themes of, you know, there, most of us had those like four things in the top, or close to the top. And then we kind of had business coming in. So I'm assuming that the top ones would get more money. We're kind of thinking maybe the top ones would get more money. And then as we go down the list, maybe a little bit less money. But definitely United Way and the homeless shelter were the top two kind of across the board. So do you want us to try and come up with numbers for each of those, Rachel or Will?
What do you think, Rachel?
I think if you have a dollar amount in mind, that's always helpful. I think it would help us to have some flexibility, especially on the homeless services, because I know they've made a similar ask to the county. So we will have some flexibility. We've heard you loud and clear that that's a very high priority. I think the way you ranked it, Mayor, gives us some direction. Most to the United Way, homeless services, knowing that we will have some flexibility with for the county, and then utility, child care. So let us take a look at it after we have a couple more meetings this week and talk to the county. And then we can let you know if we need additional assistance there or guidance.
Okay, great.
Will, are you comfortable with that?
I think that's great, yeah. We'll come back and we'll do another item if we need to. But if not, we'll just move forward with this. I think that works. It works well.
Great. Thank you, everyone. I know we didn't come down to exact dollar amounts, but we have great direction, I think, for staff to come back and give us a little bit more information on those numbers. But I think, you know, we have direction, and that's fantastic. Thank you, everyone.
Gladys, did you have something?
Did you have something, Gladys?
Yeah, I feel like maybe I'm not really being seen, but so I was just going to make that same suggestion that Rachel had, because the county also has dollars. Is there a way that between the county and the city, we can kind of collaborate to figure out maybe they can fund this half, we can fund the other half, but alignment with the county on these dollars?
Yeah, thank you, Councillor. We'll certainly follow up with them. And again, we've heard, you know, do the most good for the most a number of people from you. And we certainly have partners that we can work with on that. So appreciate all the feedback.
Great. Thank you, everyone. That was a great discussion. It's always good to be able to talk about how we can help, and especially in such a time of need, and that we're able to do that. So it's, you know, a real positive thing. Thank you, everyone. So let's adjourn. I'm going to adjourn the work session, and we'll go ahead and open the regular council meeting. Agenda additions or corrections?
There are none, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. So we have a consent agenda, which includes council meeting minutes of August 10th and the fourth contract, which was revised. Any questions on that, or does someone want to make a motion? Megan?
Sorry, I'm just trying to find where my question was. Okay. So page 21 of the packet, 20 and 21, where it, I don't know legalese, but it's intentional misconduct is like we indemnify that, and that sounds weird. Is that normal contract language?
So So we're talking about the fourth contract, and Dan, do you want to help chime in on this? And Councilor Saunders, which line are you talking about?
So like page 21, third line down, fourth actual or alleged, B is intentional misconduct, and I can get unintentional misconduct, but intentional just seems like a weird thing to plan for.
Dan, are you available to weigh in on this?
Yes. Let me look at what it's supposed to cover is that we would indemnify them for our negligence and our intentional misconduct, and we won't indemnify them for any of those things. Does that make sense? The usually negligence is the only thing that's covered. I always put in intentional misconduct as well. But we're not indemnifying them for their intentional misconduct or torts.
Okay. This is where I have trouble reading these. It's good for us, not bad for us, is what you're saying.
Right.
Okay.
Right. let's see. Yeah, I'm trying to make this as clear as I can. When you see a contract like this, you look for immediately what are the potential sources of liability for the city coming from these people doing their thing under the contract, whatever it is. And in this case, you know, they'll be providing these charging stations and setting them up. We will be sometimes using these vehicles. And so we want to make sure if there's any problem with part of their equipment on our property, that they indemnify us for that. Or if their employees do anything negligent that causes damage, they indemnify us for that, because we would likely be a target of a lawsuit if it happened on our property. And by the same token, any intentional conduct that their employees do, say they commit a theft or an assault or something like that, we are not going to indemnify them if it happens on our property and there's a claim against the city for that, something that they did, they indemnify us for that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you, Dan.
Okay.
Gladys?
I have a couple of questions. So they talk about reporting, and I'm just curious about what type of reporting will take place, what is reported in regards to what information is given to the Department of Energy. Is this like a monthly, quarterly report? I really just have concerns about privacy, especially when it comes to giving information to the federal government. So what kind of information will Forth be sharing?
Thank you for that, Councilor Rivera. And I have Kelly Urich in the attendee list. I think she can help answer that. Jonathan, can you find her and promote her into panelist?
Can you please tell me the name one more time?
Kelly Urich. She's the project manager on this with Forth.
Okay, there we go.
Kelly, you should be able to speak now. And the question's about the Department of Energy grant and the reporting requirements of the DOE with this pilot project.
Great, thanks, Will. Can you all hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for your question and to answer it as succinctly as possible. So we are required to report to the DOE on a quarterly basis. Typically that reporting is just a narrative that it will be me as the project manager will write. And then accompanying that are financials. So, you know, we'll be expanding on what expenses have been spent to date, as well as, you know, things like cost share and match requirements that have been coming in to date, and just speaking to our progress toward meeting overall program deliverables. In terms of the data that's being collected, I can assure you that A, this is something that I care really deeply about preserving as well, that being the privacy. So as far as I am concerned, and as far as the data that I'm interested in, it will be completely anonymized. So there won't be any data that is tied to a specific user in any way. The data that we will be capturing is related to the pricing and how much the rentals and the reservations are costing each time, because we are looking for a financially sustainable model for the car share. And then second to that, we will be tracking the charging data and like circumstances of the car. So we'll be, you know, we'll have an understanding of when the cars are charging, how much electricity that's consuming, et cetera. And then, and we'll be attributing that back to, you know, the greenhouse gas reductions that we'll hopefully be seeing.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And while I have you on the line, what is C number five talks about fourth materials. What is considered fourth materials?
So I would have to say, and I apologize, my agenda was taking a moment to load. But to me, the fourth materials are things like promotional materials, flyers, things of that nature that we'll be providing.
And I have two more questions. I don't know if you or Will can answer this one. So A6, it says, you know, that Forth must provide all information, but is that information going to be made available both in English and in Spanish? Because I don't see it in there. And I recall the last meeting we talked about this, Forth was going to work with either the next door or someone like that. And I just don't see that in here. Further down, B2, it says Hood River staff will assist. So does that mean that Hood River staff is going to translate, or what is the other agency that's going to help with the language barrier?
Yeah, excellent question. So we are still intending to do translation for everything that we can. That includes the app, the platform that the cars will be rented on, but any of those promotional materials that I mentioned earlier. No, we would not be expecting the city to help in any of that. You're remembering correctly in that we're really hoping to work with the next door to be able to facilitate some of the outreach, but also some of those translations.
Perfect. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Additional questions on the contract? Okay.
Eric has one.
Oh, Eric, go ahead, Eric.
Sorry, thank you, Mayor. I guess I had a question for Will and then a question for Kelly as well. And I guess as a preamble, in January, just in full disclosure, I actually was, I think, the only person who voted against this plan. And frankly, over my year and a half on council, looking back, the votes that I felt uneasy about, that probably tops the list for me. So I do plan to vote for this. I do have reservations about it, but my personal feeling is that I didn't persuade council for my reasons before, and so I'm going to embrace the will of the majority from January and set aside my own personal concerns about this. But I guess my first question for Will is, I'm still confused about what the spots will be, because if I'm understanding the agenda item cover sheet memo, there's issues with respect to city council's building having the right infrastructure to facilitate it. And it sounds like there's either going to be two or three spots, one at Columbia Cascade Housing and one on the port. But if you read the agreement, it says in section B1 that we're going to have a spot at City Hall and also one at the Columbia Street parking lot, which is different than what the cover memo says. So I guess that's my first question, is where are these spots? Because the memo doesn't seem to line up with the agreement.
So one spot is the southwest corner of the Columbia lot. So the Columbia lot is our biggest parking lot across the street from Full Sail. And so it will be in the southwest corner of that and kind of against the condos over there. And then the other space will be in the City Hall parking lot on the north side of City Hall with the charging equipment coming out of City Hall. And the Columbia lot, so the original idea for both of them was that Forth would create their own customer account with PGE. So they would get their own bills, they would pay their own bills. That is still gonna work with the Columbia lot. But the infrastructure in our 100-year-old building, the electrician looked at it and they cannot create a new service on our building. So what the contract envisions is that the it will be metered through the unit itself, which knows how much electricity is being used, and then will be reimbursed directly from Forth there. So they're paying their own bills directly for Columbia lot. They're paying their bills through the city for City Hall. The previous version of this contract thought that we might use up to 3 spaces, and that was to go, to help Forth guard against if any of their other partners fell through. But things are moving forward with Columbia Crossing, or with the Housing Authority, to put two vehicles with the Housing Authority on their spaces, and then one with the Port of Hood River. So we're moving, we had authorized up to 3, and that was just as sort of as an insurance policy. Now, 6 months more in, we know we're only going to need to use 2.
Okay, thank you. And then I guess my last question, if maybe Kelly could answer it, and it sort of ties into what Councilor Rivera was asking. In particular, Section 5 talks about the information, these Forth materials that belong to the Forth, and you know, one of the priorities we've set in our goal setting is to have transparency in our government, and I am a little bit concerned about the last sentence of Section 5, which says that we the city are not supposed to provide any Forth materials in response to a public records request without Forth's prior written consent. And I'm not sure if there's a way for us to work with Forth to improve that, to be something more along the lines of, you know, we'll respect the, we'll follow the law as it relates to our public records request. But I'm just not sure. I just feel unsettled about having a private company needing to provide written consent for the city to respond to a public records request. And I guess my question to Kelly is if there's a way for us to work on that, I would be comfortable with this agreement.
I think actually the city attorney might be able to talk about the thought, why that language is like it is. Dan, can you opine?
Sure. Eric, you probably remember better than most what the long ago version of this agreement looked like. And it had an awful lot of kind of business confidential information references to it, and was and pretty much bound the city to not reveal any of that information or disclose any of that information with no reason, no justification. And so we've shortened this down to this specific exemption under the state public records law, that if material is submitted, you know, voluntarily by someone under the representation that it would be kept confidential and doesn't otherwise have to be submitted that way, that the city can use that as a reason to withhold disclosure. But it's one of those discretionary exemptions to the Public Records Act, and it kind of is incumbent upon, don't really know what all this information is. I don't, you know, maybe Ms. Urich can explain what all it is. So it's hard for me to see that it was, all of it was business, confidential, proprietary information. You know, a lot of times software, when there's proprietary software involved, or business marketing information, and if it got out, there'd be a competitive advantage. That's the reason for this business confidential exemption to the Public Records Act. It's not supposed to, you know, blanket cover everything, that even their like promotional materials and those sorts of things. So Ms. York may be able to explain more specifically, but we narrowed this down significantly from the way it was originally drafted.
Yeah, I will jump in here and say, you know, I think we could probably loosen this language even a bit further. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't foresee us producing any materials that we would not, in fact, want the city to help us share out. You know, like I mentioned, we'll be just creating a lot of promotional materials. And then reports of that nature further down the road to sort of talk about the best practices that we've learned throughout this process. And so, like I said, you know, I think in all of those cases, we would in fact want the city to help share those things out. The only place where I could potentially see something is that the fact that this is a U.S. Department of Energy funded project, essentially, many of those reports are becoming, they will become, you know, under the DOE's kind of sort of guidance, I suppose. So, but again, I don't, you know, I would be comfortable loosening this language to something okay. that you're more comfortable with.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And I think if we can just have those comments in the minutes from both Dan and Ms. Urick, in case we have to come back and look at this, that would satisfy my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Anything else before we do the consent agenda? Okay, does anyone want to make a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I can move that we approve the consent agenda.
We have a motion to approve the consent agenda. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
I think Mark seconded officially. Roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
Megan?
Yes.
Gladys?
Yes.
Tim?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Consent agenda is passed. Regular business items. We have a big item on, and I see Jennifer's face there now. Great. Parks master plan approval. A long time coming, but I'm very happy we're here. Go ahead, Jessica.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Mayor and Council. You should have a PowerPoint coming up on your screen, and if you can give me an indication that you see it, then I...
You see it.
We got it.
I am pleased to bring to you tonight the culmination of a lot of input from more than 1,400 residents of the Hood River area, and as was mentioned earlier, hundreds of hours of time spent by multiple agencies to develop the first multi-jurisdictional parks master plan. So tonight you have an opportunity to accept by resolution this first ever multi-jurisdictional parks plan for our area. It may be the first for any county in Oregon. I suspect Metro has a regional plan, but we did not find other examples of multi-jurisdictional plans in Oregon. The plan provides important guidance for future decision-making for the city for management and planning efforts for parks and trails. It provides that guidance within the city and beyond the city in the district boundaries, the Hood River Parks and Rec District boundaries, which include most of Hood River County, except for Cascade Locks. A copy of the full plan is available on the Parks and Recreation District website, which is for the audience and the benefit of media, is hoodriverparksandrec.org. And let's see. There we go. Just to remind you where we started on this project, you will recall that the formal city guidance the city has for parks planning is our goal 8 section of the comprehensive plan. In 2012, the Parks and Rec District adopted a master plan that includes information about city parks. That plan was not adopted by the city. In 2018, the Parks and Rec District initiated and then later led an effort to develop this multi-jurisdictional plan. And the three lead agencies, I would say, participating in the plan were the district, the city, and Hood River County. There's also participation from the school district and from the Port of Hood River. It was a grant-funded effort, and the effort included a robust community engagement plan that included a community survey that was bilingual in English and in Spanish, and included a community meeting, several stakeholder discussions, three focus groups focused on recreation organizations, sports leagues, and the Latino community. There were information booths at least 12 community events. There was social media outreach. And as I said before, these efforts resulted in more than 1,400 residents providing input and recommendations for future of parks and trails in Hood River. In addition, city staff participated in a technical advisory group, and the effort led to multiple drafts of the plan. You also devoted a significant effort to this plan. You've had at least 2 work sessions and 2 briefings on drafts of the plan. You appointed 3 of your members, Councilors Haney, Saunders, and Zammiller, to join a subcommittee of leaders from other agencies to dive into the drafts of the plan and participate in, I think, 5 multi-jurisdictional meetings representing the city's interests. And you provided specific guidance on the vision statement, the construction of the document itself. It was first drafted without an executive summary, for example. You provided specific guidance on the goals and policies, the level of service goals. You provided guidance on classifications of parks and the inventory of parks, the role that you envision the city playing in many of the goals, policies, and strategies in the plan. You provided direction to align this plan with the work that was done as part of the West Side Area Concept Plan and the plan report. And you provided guidance on the capital projects list, and as well as technical corrections and other adjustments to drafts of the plan. Let's see. The result is that you have a plan that first provides a collaborative vision for the entire district boundary for the city, the county, and the district. It also has some outcomes that are specific benefit to the city. The plan includes goals, policies, and objectives to help measure how, to help us guide us in keeping up with the vision and how to achieve the vision. The plan includes inventories and evaluates existing park and recreation areas, both for the city and for the larger community. As I mentioned, it establishes level of service goals, and these include establishing a neighborhood or community park within a certain distance of all residences, and it also includes a numeric value to that level of service goal in trying to achieve 2 acres of neighborhood or community park per 1,000 residents in the urban area. It includes level service goals for trails as well, and having trails located within a quarter to a half mile of residences. For the parks, the plan identifies underserved areas and identifies corresponding target acquisition areas to help guide you in determining where to potentially acquire future parkland and develop parks in the future. And as I said, this aligns with the work that the city did in conjunction with the West Side Area Plan. It also identifies gaps in the bicycle and pedestrian network and recommends routes to improve connectivity for bicyclists and pedestrians. Trail connectivity was one of the top items that was mentioned in the community engagement effort. And again, this part of the plan also aligns with the work that the city has done with the West Side Plan. And you'll see on the map that it includes general alignments for the conceptually proposed Henderson Creek Corridor Trail and Ridgeline Trail. The plan also identifies strategic projects to help achieve the desired level of service and the goals of the plan. It encourages opportunities for shared resources and partnerships with other agencies to develop and maintain parks and trails. And it includes ideas for funding strategies to sustain the system of parks and trails and recreation services to meet the needs of the community. Perhaps equally significant, this plan was a terrific opportunity for greater communication with the partnering agencies, which that interagency communication and the value of it was underscored even specifically with parks, with the response needed during the pandemic. So we've gained stronger relationships with park provider agencies. And the final document is, I believe, a great reflection of the community's interests and need for parks, recreational facilities, and trails. It responds to your input and recommendations, captures the community input that was gained in this process, and it provides a framework for collaboration for moving forward. For you, some of the takeaways are that it provides a framework for guidance for future work, such as the forthcoming transportation system plan amendment that will likely include identifying additional bicycle and pedestrian facilities. It could be used as guidance for the creation of a capital improvement plan for parks. And it can be used as guidance for future updates to the city's comprehensive plan. So before I close out, I wanted to respond to some questions that came up earlier tonight from Josh Siva. He had mentioned that he didn't see Wacoma Park on the maps, featured on the maps. And I think he was referring to the maps that really focus on the walkshed areas of identifying which residential areas are currently served by parks and which are not. And those maps included parks that are classified as neighborhood parks and community parks and regional parks. The Wacoma Park is included in this plan and is classified as undeveloped and open space. So those spaces were not included on those maps. And the plan does allow for flexibility so that if in the future you decide to reclassify any of the parks, you have that authority and prerogative to do so. So if you decide, for instance, at some point that you would, this plan does not provide any kind of legal or formal designation. It is used more for planning purposes. If you decide you would rather classify and then develop Wacoma Park as a neighborhood park, you have the ability to do so. You have in your packet a resolution to accept the multi-jurisdictional parks plan for all as guidance for your future decision-making, management, and planning efforts related to parks and trails. And I would welcome any questions, but I also want to give a big Thank you to Mark Hickok, Director of Parks and Rec District, and his assistant director, Marcy Wiley. She did a lot of the heavy lifting with a lot of the edits that the council subcommittee and I provided to Marcy and then to the consultant who helped draft the plan. And they were great to work with, and I think we have a good product here for you, and I'm happy to answer any questions and also let you know that you are the first entity to be looking at this for acceptance. The Parks District has it on their agenda, I believe, in at their next meeting in mid-September. So with that, I will be happy to take any questions.
Megan?
I read your lips. So just going back to the Wacoma question, Jennifer, and I can't remember the specifics, but it is Neighborhood Park had either a size and or an amenity requirement to be considered a neighborhood park, correct?
Generally speaking, yes. The neighborhood parks, we aspire to have them be around 2 acres in size. That is not currently the case with most of our neighborhood parks. We have the plan includes some descriptions for each of the park classification. And the neighborhood park says it may have parking and restrooms, it may include a play area or sports courts, picnic facilities. And so because Wacoma Park, it does have the bench, as Josh mentioned, but because it doesn't have a lot of sort of developed amenities, that is why it seemed like a better fit at this point in time for that park, that piece of land, to be classified as undeveloped open space.
I agree. Thanks, Jennifer. Well, I'm going to just quickly do the shout out of Jennifer put in an insane amount of hours to get this plan to a point where I think, if I can speak for them, Mark, Eric, and I are pretty happy with it. So thank you very much. And then just for my clarity or the council's clarity, and we've talked about this at the subcommittee level, but there are some sections of this plan that are about, you know, programming and other stuff the city doesn't generally, hasn't historically done, and we're not planning to get to. And having those in the plan we adopt as background doesn't commit the city to suddenly taking that on, correct?
That's correct, Councillor. And just to clarify, the resolution is to accept the plan as guidance. It is not formally becoming a background report or amending the comprehensive plan. In some part, for that very reason, it includes sections that are not typically a role the city plays with parks and recreation.
Thank you.
Mark?
So a couple things and then a couple questions as well. So Jennifer, thank you for herding us cats through the process. It was, we hit a lot of things we wanted to get in there, and you did a marvelous job of sorting the chaff out of the wheat. So I appreciate that. Marcy and Mark and Marcy, I know you guys are listening, and they put in endless hours, like Megan said. And I hope you're proud of the document, and I hope that this can help all of us entities work well together to do some real good in the community. So all great. And for Josh, I guess, you know, to me, an oak tree is worth way more than a playground sometimes. And so Wacoma Park is priceless just the way it is. So I would hate to see Children's Park 2 right next to Children's Park 1 in those woods. My question, I guess, is the accepting versus adopting, and is this, are we getting enough, do we have teeth that we wanted to help guide acquisition and development out of the acceptance, or is it part of the math, our annual plan review to talk about what are the next steps, or what does staff advise?
Yes, I think that this provides you a great platform for developing projects on your annual work plan related to parks. And it gives you all the tools you might want to use that aren't necessarily required to use as far as what pertains solely to the county or to the parks district, for example. I think you get the benefit of everything that you want to use from the plan. And that is the main thinking behind accepting the plan as guidance, as opposed to having a formally adopted plan and then having the potential for something in the plan that maybe isn't directly related to city operations, but then it's perceived as such.
Right. And I think, you know, we had talked about how do we pull the pieces out that are city centric for a more formal adoption. And so I look forward to that discussion as well. So.
And Councilor Mayor, if I might add, there, as we've said all along, there are likely some follow-up implementation items after we get the after the plan is approved and after we get the capital improvement plan. There could be some funding conversations that council wants to have, some various strategies about how we actually fund that follow-up plan. So certainly more to come on the implementation side.
Other questions? Eric, and then Tim.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess if I could just share the sentiments that have already been expressed with all the thanks from staff, both within the city as well as the Parks Department. But I'm also, and not to belittle the contributions from myself or Megan, we both put a lot of time into this, but I just want to give thanks to Mark and his leadership on this document. He really rolled up his sleeves a number of times. Mark, I remember sitting in your office going through these things, and you just really gave it your all. I just think that should be acknowledged. I think this is an aspirational document. As has been said, it doesn't amend Goal 8. I don't think we could even do that through a resolution if we wanted to. But this tells us where we want to go as a city and as a whole community with our parks. And I think from here, now we just need to, now we need to get there. You know, things coming down the pipe to me, acquiring parkland, land on the west side so that we don't have Gresham over on the west side. We have the parks that our community has asked to have. So working on that, maybe we have a parks bond measure coming down the pipe at some point. You know, the new pool, possibly community center. There's a vision for a green belt in this plan. So there's a lot in here. And it does present a great vision for where we can go with our community that has this quest for more parks, which is absolutely something we should all be passionate about. Now the question is, how do we get there? And that's where we will go in our work sessions in the future. But not really a question in there. I really just wanted to point out Mark's leadership on this and express my thanks there. And my general view that we have work to do here from here. We don't just approve this and we're done. We've got to make sure those parks actually happen. But this is a visionary document for us to have.
Thanks, Eric. Tim?
Thanks, Mayor. I guess since, you know, I wasn't at all the meetings that you guys went to, I'm kind of wondering if each one of you, Megan, Eric, and Mark, could just say what's your least favorite part of the plan, or was there something that you wanted in the plan that didn't get in the plan?
They're not Mark? Raising their hands. They must love it.
I mean, Mark. There's a lot, and Megan sort of hit on it. There's you know, it tries to cover recreational programs that we don't really do and stuff. So I wouldn't say the least part that I like or complaint with it, but that, you know, we were trying to be careful about which things are in the scope of other entities more than ours. And I think we did a pretty good job of that. And I think the discussions were valuable. So, you know, we're not going to have a thing where one entity will say, but you said you were going to do this. I think that we've headed that out. So I don't have anything I object to in the master plan.
Thanks, Mark.
Eric or Megan, did you have anything?
Sorry, my computer froze and I don't know what the question is.
Oh, was there anything you didn't like or that you thought was should have been in or was in that you didn't want in or something like that?
I'm going to kind of follow Mark's of my biggest concern was that we were, you know, suddenly committing the city to things we have never done and didn't really have capacity or resources to do. So that was definitely in the programming side of things, I think is the most common. And I think we got it to a point where it's very clear that is not an arena we will be stepping into in this plan. So I'm quite comfortable with where we got.
And I guess I would say the way I put it, part of me really wished this wasn't just aspirational, that we were able to put all in one spot our absolute plan to make these parks all happen. So it falls short of that, but that's not a criticism of it. Because and this was a lot of discussion early on in the planning is, do we make this mandatory? Do we make it aspirational? And we got on the aspirational track sort of out of necessity, because you have to have your vision before you build to it. So it is aspirational, which is the best part about it and the worst part about it.
Thank you. So I guess I just have one, you know, just one more general comment, but I think, you know, it's to me, I was reading the goal statements and I'm thinking to myself, God, what is wrong? Why am I not getting these goal statements? And I think really what it is, is that they're lacking any type of action verb. They're like statements as opposed to like a goal. So I'm just throwing that out there as a criticism. That, you know, words like will and will create and kind of like doing things in statements, I think would actually make the goal statements stand out more. So that's my minor editorial comment. And there are a few typos scattered here and there throughout the document.
We might have given up on trying to address those.
Thank you, Tim.
I think it really would be, you know, because I think Jennifer's point that this is kind of like the first time that this has been done, I think it would be good to kind of address those type of things and wrap it up. Zip it up, as it were.
Thanks. Okay, Gladys or Jessica? Jessica, I guess you had your hand up. Go ahead.
I don't really have any questions, just to say thank you and great work to Mark, Marcy, Jennifer, and to our counselors on the committee. So thank you all. I know there's a lot of time and I really appreciate all of your work on this. So thank you.
Thanks, Gladys.
I don't have any questions either. I too just want to thank folks who took the time and energy on this. I was not a part of this process, so thank you all for all the work that you did.
Great. I'm just going to echo the thank yous, Megan, Eric, and Mark, and also Marcy and Mark Hickok that are on the line, all the work that you did to put this together. It was truly a whole community effort. There's a couple things in the presentation, Jennifer, or one of the things in the presentation, Jennifer, that you had, and I think I'm almost glad this is, you know, a little bit more aspirational, because there was a bike route that was actually on Belmont and Union, and I think we've designated Safe Routes to Schools as being Wilson and A Street now, so that bikes aren't on one of the main streets. But I don't think that it's a conflict. you know, because we've just been refining things a little bit better, and those things will be in the transportation system plan too. So I don't think it's, you know, we just know that we wanted a bike route approximately in that area, and now we're kind of designating it just one street over. So I just wanted to point that out. But, you know, if it was in stone, we might go, oh no, we made a mistake. So I think it's fine to be that way. The resolution on the whereas, we have Hood River Valley Parks and Recreation District, Port of Hood River, Hood River Valley School District. But we don't have Hood River County. So I think we should have added Hood River County in there. It says provide recreational facilities for the benefit of residents. And I think Hood River County has recreational facilities that are campgrounds. So I think that, and trail systems too. So I think we should actually add that into the second whereas to put Hood River County in there. That's all I had on it.
Thank you, Mayor. That is a good catch. That is an oversight on the whereas clause. And then to the earlier comment, I think you answered your own question. You will, staff is working as we speak on preparation for an amendment to our transportation system plan that will refine some of the bike and bicycle and pedestrian facilities in finer detail than this plan shows. So I echo what you said earlier.
Okay, great. All right, we have, let's see where we have a motion.
Tim's got his hand up.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I just picked a time when you were looking down on purpose.
Oh, sorry.
I do have your comments kind of brought up one question I did have, and that's in the open space and natural area goal. And for, I'm just wondering why in that goal, Hood River County's park system is called out as opposed to just generally Hood River.
Are you talking about in the actual resolution, Tim?
Where
are
you talking? No, I'm actually talking about in the document, in the plan itself. It's open space and natural areas. It says Hood River County's parks system includes areas that provide, and it calls out Hood River County parks specifically.
So there are some terms in the plan that are used a little bit interchangeably. There's Hood River County, the entity. There's Hood River County, the geographic area. Mm. And this, I think, is referring more to the geographic area being broader than any one city. There was some back and forth about wording, whether it should say the district or the Hood River area or the county. So the goal that I have reads park providers in the Hood River area. That's goal number one. And I think that really you could interchange that with Hood River County's parks system in goal two. As you'll note on the strategies that are listed under the two policies for open space and natural area, the city does have roles, including leadership roles in some of those strategies. Mm-hmm. So it isn't meant to limit the goal to the county as an entity.
I guess that would be my next comment then, is trying to get rid of the interchangeability of a lot of those things and just call one thing. Because it does kind of imply when you're kind of, maybe incorrectly, my interpretation of it is that it implied that it was different somehow. And these are just like minor comments. It doesn't really change the content at all. It's probably more just a matter of semantics.
I know that the Parks District staff is listening, so I will touch base with them on that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we have if people are ready, we have a motion on page 26 of our packet. And if
I move at the city council,
Oh,
I move at the city.
Gladys, I was just going to say that fantastic. Go ahead and make the motion. And could we just add the Hood River County into the second whereas?
All right, I just lost the page. I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2020-14 to accept August 2020 draft of the Multi-Jurisdictional Parks Recreational and Open Space Parks Master Plan for All. Oops, sorry, I read that wrong. Sorry, I got nervous. Parks Plan for All as guidance for city planning efforts for park and trails, and that we add Hood River County in the second whereas.
I'll second.
Thank you, Gladys, for the first, and Megan has made a second to approve Resolution 2020-14. I'll do roll call vote. Mark?
Yes.
Eric?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Tim?
Aye.
Gladys?
Yes.
Jessica?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. We've approved the Parks Master Plan. Thank you, everyone. Fantastic work. Fantastic work by the Parks District, too. Thank you so much, Parks District, that is on our call tonight. All right, police facility site analysis. It's about 8. Can we take about 5 minutes? 5 minute break. Recess. Looks like we have everyone here, I think. Yeah. Okay, we'll call this back into session. It's about 8 minutes after 8. Police facility site analysis. I think that's yours, Will.
Yeah, and we have Neil here too. So thank you, Mayor and City Council. This is a follow-on to an item where we looked at a site analysis for 6 sites, and then council wanted us to bring back and look at a 7th site, Columbia Lot. So this is really a follow-on item from a couple months ago. The project itself started back in 2018 when the City Council first made it a goal to look at the building the community's first ever purpose-built police facility. Throughout the history of Hood River, the police department has generally been shuffled around in different office spaces. They're currently housed in the basement of City Hall and never have had a facility tailored to the profession of policing. Because this is a follow-on item from before, I won't go through all the 7 sites. I'll just discuss the top 3 and then we can answer any questions. The most highly rated, starting from the third most highly rated, is the Cascade Lot, which is downtown. That lot scored highly due to its location and ease of building, conformance with zoning rules. That lot was chosen as the downtown lot because it's too small to house a parking garage. That was the original thought when Neil and I added it to the list instead of the Columbia lot, was that while the Columbia lot could have decks added to it, the Cascade lot never would be able to. So it's essentially reached its maximum use density. So we looked at that, and it is just even a tad bit too small for a police station. See, the site fit doesn't exactly get to our approved space program of a little over 13,000 square feet. It clocks in at about 12,000 and some change. The pool site is the number 2 ranked site and really ideal in so many different ways. We're being right smack dab in the geographic center of our community. Good transit access and next door to the fire department. However, it is currently occupied by the pool, and we don't know any sort of solid timeline on when the pool is going to move. So it really sets our police in a position where they're going to indefinitely need to be in substandard facilities, and makes us likely miss our opportunity to ask for continued authorization, bond authorization after the bonds that built the fire facility expire in 2022. The seventh site, which ranks, would even when we ran it through the IACP, ranked higher than the Cascade site, is the Columbia lot, which City Council asked us to look at last time this came before you. Very large parcel, good flow through, allows us to have the full space program of a little over 13,000 square feet, and has good and has the correct zoning, highly buildable flat. So that is the recommended site. One item that has changed as an alternative from the last time that this came to City Council is also an alternative to pause our contract with McKinsey. The existing contract that we have envisions that we select a site and move directly into block diagrams and between two sites, then select a site, do a preliminary design and cost estimation, and then that's the end of the project. Because this, if we choose the Columbia site, it's going to take up over 100 parking spaces and basically necessitate what we've been kind of on the bubble on as a city for probably over a decade, building a parking garage to replace those lost spaces. Staff recommends that we discontinue our contract with McKinsey early and rebid for a joint police facility parking garage, half funded by the Urban Renewal Agency. It would be more cost-effective. There's economies of scale to designing both at the same time. And I think it will also help, because parking is such a contentious and hot issue, it will help people see that we are committed to simultaneously replacing the parking. Lastly, I think that pausing here and rebidding for a larger project creates another opening for the county to plug in and for us to do this in a partnership way. You know, I just hit that really briefly in my staff report, but since this council packet went out, Rachel and I have met with Jeff, and I think they're since their operating levy was passed, they're in a completely different place as far as their ability to collaborate with us on some type of joint facility. I did receive their space program. Well, our space program is 13,000 square feet. Their space program for courts and sheriff is about 56,000 square feet. So still very much a stretch that would be able to make that fit. But I think this creates an opportunity for us to at least give it a really serious look. So that's the site analyses in a nutshell, as well as what staff would recommend as an alternative if we choose the Columbia site as a preferred site. And Neil and I are available to take any questions.
Great, thank you, Will. Appreciate it. Who has questions for Will? Megan?
I feel like it's always me. So the staff report and your presentation talked about, you know, replacing the sites that are lost. Would we be able to do like a full second layer that I assume would actually add some capacity downtown, or just replace lost sites?
That's where we need to bring some architects on board. And I'd be obviously do that really closely with Dustin and his work with the parking, with the parking study to forecast out what we're going to need. And, you know, we're building a police facility that's going to carry us through to 2060 and even further. And so, yeah, I think we would want to look at what is the parking garage? What is the parking garage that would carry us through 2060 as well?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess that I'd hate to go through all this effort to, you know, just replace capacity when we're pretty confident we are going to need more, or already do. So, and I guess more in the commentary than question, I think there's incredible value in doing a shared county city site if possible, both for, you know, space savings that maybe we all don't need, you know, one Sallyport each, we can just use one, as well as just collaboration and you know, building camaraderie between people that should be working closely together, and I think already do, but I think creates value for this community for sure.
Mark?
my recollection of the last meeting was that we were going to look at State Street with Sallyport added underneath it and Cascade Street. And I was envisioning sort of a two-story just in the corner, not using half of all of Columbia Street. So this is quite different from what I expected. I also know that parking-wise, you know, there's a couple of things going on, just as systemic improvements and the possibility that railroad and other surface lot things where we haven't said at the parking subcommittee anyway, that yeah, let's proceed with the deck structure on the Columbia lot. So I guess I'm trying to just figure out where to put two things that I didn't think were going in that direction in a new, what do we do next? Does that make sense? I don't know where's the question mark? I don't know. So maybe a question, why did you throw out the State Street with the Sallyport underneath that I know we talked about?
Neil, I wonder if you, can you help with recollection of that at all? I'm sorry, my recollection was that the State Street could not support a Sallyport.
That's what I recall too, Will, that McKenzie said that due to the lack of land and the structure there that it couldn't provide it.
Well, it was, you know, you guys, the cartoon was trying to include public parking underneath and I guess that's like a dead horse maybe.
Well, my recollection now that Mark's brought this up, because I didn't remember, was that we were going to add the Columbia lot to look at to get to the same place the other seven were, and then potentially look at two sites, potentially being State Street and Columbia or whichever second one, to kind of do that follow-up of I think where Mark is talking about a redesign that's different than what McKenzie had tried. If that sounds familiar to anyone else.
I'll back up on that. That was my recollection as well.
It is the the standard next step was to go into greater detail on just two of the sites that is built into our contract.
That's what I remember too. We were going to add the one we added and then go back and have them do more drawings on two, whatever those two were going to be. I don't think we made a decision because we didn't know what this one was going to look like. I think that's where we were anyway. But I do understand why we're talking, you know, we talked about potentially adding parking on the lot across from Full Sail. So I can see why we would be talking about both if we're going to take parking away down there. I mean, we almost have to, if we're going to consider that site, we need to add the parking back in because we need 350 more spaces than we have right now. So I think that was why, if we're going to consider that space, we have to go that direction. Not that we can't consider a different space too. Others? Tim?
So Will and Neil, did you guys redo the ranking then? Did you re-rank everything in the context of the new addition of the Columbia lot?
Fully re-ranked all sites, correct.
Yeah, because it seems like that the pool site has come up, or did it not come up in its ranking?
And the pool and the absolute relative position of each, the points changed, but I believe it was always number two, which is, it just had that, and essentially it was the best except for the fatal flaw that it's taken.
Jessica?
I guess, Tim, were you done? I didn't mean to jump in if you, okay. One question I had was, I noticed on the new one, the Cascade, the Columbia lot, one of the cons was the adjacent residential view impacts. And I wondered, are there like view easements or restrictions that we need to keep in mind? Yeah, she's saying that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think so. I've never heard of any view easements that go with those condominiums.
Yeah, I would be surprised, because this has been built into our urban renewal plan for a location for a parking garage for quite some time.
I think as far as history on that, when we talked about a parking garage years ago, the mayor might recall that Mr. Colt was concerned about his view. And they did have some questions about, they purchased those, and now we would be building potentially at that time was a parking garage. So that's why that was put in there, for potential, mm-hmm. Stumbling block potentially there.
I wasn't surprised that the Columbia lot was also coupled with a parking garage. I feel like that's kind of where the conversation went last time. Like, oh, well, we would consider putting it there if we also put in a parking garage. It could be. So I wasn't as surprised maybe as Mark was.
Eric or Gladys?
Oh, I don't mean to step over Gladys, but I would just want to note too that this is very simple drawings. They're just site fit tests. And that's where the next thing is a full, real preliminary design. So things can change radically. This is just, will it fit? Kind of binary, yes or no.
I don't have any questions, because I too recall that Columbia was added as the last one, and that I think it was Megan that brought up parking. So I don't have any questions.
Eric?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I guess I had a similar feeling as Mark, that I thought there would be more focus on the State Street option. But if the Sallyport is a must and it's a no-go, then I guess I'm hearing, and just by the ranking seems to tell me, that the staff, including the police department, doesn't like the State Street option. And if that's the case, then that, that's something that needs to sink in my mind, because that's a very important perspective. And I would, I guess I would echo what I thought I was hearing from Councillor Saunders. It just seems like if we're gonna add a parking garage, it should be not just net zero, but sort of net substantially plus. Because we're gonna sell it as a parking garage in the community, we're not just replacing the units we're taking, we're actually also trying to solve our parking problem. So it seems like we should shoot for gaining substantially more than we're taking. And I guess if I do have a question, it would be, do we need to engage with our parking committee? Because we put so much effort into that. And I went to a lot of those meetings, and it seemed like the parking garage was something that was not going to be something we're pulling the trigger on soon. And then boom, here it is. So it just seems like there's a connection with that group that needs to be looped in if this is in fact going to be our approach.
I think the parking committee we have a plan now that the parking committee, all the information that, I don't know how long it took us, 11 months or something to get through all that. And we have a report, and there's a whole bunch of really great data and conclusions that we came to. And then we, accepted that report as a council. So I think we can just go back to that report and look at those numbers, and we were supposed to do this the first year, this the second year, this the third year type things, and which we've done several of those already. But I think we can get some numbers of what we need to do just by looking at that report. And, you know, I do remember that, you know, yes, in the next 20 years, we're going to need to add about 350 spaces in addition to the number we have now. So if we take some away, you know, we need to add those back in plus, wherever those might be. You know, some of them might be in this garage, potential garage, or some of them might be somewhere else. But I think we could just go back to that report and we can get a lot of that good data that we came up with from that. Other comments from anyone? Tim?
I'm also kind of wondering if there's any thought to like having the city and county join their efforts and kind of like cohabit the structure or a site. Is that something that, it sounds like it would be pretty big. Is that something that we envision at the Columbia lot? I mean, I've been having a hard time wrapping my head around the joint county city police department plus a parking garage thing there. It sounds like a lot for that part of town.
Yes, that's very brand new and very amorphous right now. I just I know it's been a goal of the city council to work collaboratively with the county, and so this is an option to restart that. Building a 65,000 square foot facility on the Columbia would probably fit, but not with a parking garage. So, you know, thinking logically, that probably means building a parking garage where the current courthouse is. But I think that's like 15 steps down the road. Yeah.
It seems like the pool site would be much more amenable to something like that. I mean, you know, and every time we do this, we add these different variables and it seems like we're re-ranking. You know, so it's like kind of like taking the pieces of the puzzle and shaking them out onto the floor again. And not to throw another facet into this, but we recently had discussions about potentially restructuring some of the police department to incorporate some type of social aspect to it. Does that change the requirements of the building and the size and such?
Neil, do you want to talk about the size of the community room and your expected programming for that space?
No, I think it's more, we're going to...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think Tim's saying that maybe like a social worker, previous council, Council Rivera had mentioned maybe a social worker within integrated. I think that's what he's thinking of.
Right.
An office space.
Yep. But, I'm not trying to throw a monkey wrench in a thing. I'm just trying to, because all of these things have kind of like come up that's been kind of evolving during the course of our conversation about this.
I think the space needs analysis that we did. It adds people, whatever they might be, as mm-hmm. our community grows, especially. There's going to be room to add additional people, whatever they may be doing. So there was space in there to go out, a long time, 20, 30, 40 years. So there would be room for more people. Gladys?
Okay, can you guys hear me? Tim, thank you for bringing these points up. It's an important part of the conversation. And now that we're talking about, is it even possible to also house the county and then maybe have that conversation with them as well of, you know, if we're thinking of doing this, then maybe they would consider adding additional services if possible within, I guess, what would be like further down. Like right now we're just trying to figure out if this is even possible and then later on talking about how the program itself is going to change. So I think we should at least ask, is it even possible? And I know that that means adding something else, but if there is an opportunity, and to house them all in one area, and eventually talking about adding additional services such as, you know, mental health resources within the police department. If we're housed in the same building, then maybe we can share, you know, those resources, or you know, maybe we can't. Is it a possibility or not?
Yeah, just echoing Mayor McBride's comments about our firsthand experience when we toured these facilities, there were empty offices because they were built to house the city's needs for, you know, 20 plus years. So there was many empty offices in those first 10, 15 years of the life of the building. So there's that component. And then to Councilor Rivera's comment about where are the additional touch points, yeah, we just did site fit tests. We're going to next go into preliminary design, and then we'll have some sort of bond campaign, and then there's going to be final design. There's going to be lots of iterations of this. We're still many years out from building this building, so not much of what we're doing right now is totally determinative of the final outcome. Lots of times to course correct.
Mark?
So I've been trying to think of what the ask is or what the next step, and if what I'm hearing is if to do a cartoon analysis to see if you can get our police department goals plus the county goals plus a plus 100 spots on that lot. I mean, you might be able to see if you can, if those Legos will even fit, and then, you know, for not a whole, you know, this isn't a development task, it's a Legos task, right? Does that sound right?
And you're talking about if we involve the county.
Yeah, I mean, we multiple people have said, yeah, that's sort of, that would be a neat goal, is if we could consolidate or have something like that, so.
But I don't think there's been, you know, there might be the funds, say the fire bond we have now, which is going to expire. And if we don't ask for more money than we asked for before, there'd be just the same amount of taxes that people would be paying. Plus we have money from urban renewal to pay for a parking structure, or a large chunk of a parking structure. So if you added those two together, then, you know, it's not asking the taxpayers to pay much more than they're putting out right now. But the county would be having to ask for a huge chunk of money because they don't have the funds to build a new courthouse or a new police station right now. So, I mean, if this is going to be coming up in the next couple of years, I mean, I think it would be great and grand, but I mean, is it even feasible? They just went out for a bond and got it. I don't know that they're going to be able to go for another bond right away for that, for a new courthouse, and because that's a lot, that's big, that's a lot of money. And I mean, am I wrong on this, Rachel or Will?
Mayor, no. I think some clarification from you was very helpful there. I think all Will and Chief are saying is that the county certainly would not be precluded from joining the conversation at this point. And we've heard from council that that would be a good goal to strive for. At this point, we're looking, you know, we would be asking to look at a facility for police department along with parking, because if we choose the Columbia lot, we would be taking up so much parking. So that's kind of where we are at. We just want to continue to have the conversation about county involvement with you, and would welcome the conversation with the county as well.
A couple logistical pieces. If we did bring the county in, they bring state money with them because the state has capital money for courthouse construction. And then secondly, we feasibly are on track to do some sort of 2020 bond election. So this has been kind of built into the process that sometimes you need to go out for a bond, hear from the voters, and retool. So that flexibility is still built into our timeline, that we could go out for a bond in 2021 and then hear from the voters and reconfigure if necessary and not lose our chance in 2022 to continue uninterrupted the expiring fire geo bond monies.
Yeah, I think conversations with the county is fine to continue having, but I don't know that it's going to be happening anytime soon. And we may want to, like you said, get this going in 2021 if we possibly can, and start planning for this parking, additional parking too. Megan?
Yes, I'm going to disagree. Where to me, that I mean, if we're going to build this for the next 40 years, like, far higher goal to me that we actually build collaboration, assuming there's any possibility of it, and do a joint facility, then we move forward, you know, 2 years ahead of them, build this thing for ourselves, and then of course we're never going to collaborate for 40 years or longer. And honestly, you know, site-wise, if we're going to be a joint facility versus not, potentially changes what I think is the best site option. So I'd like to see that there's some like real conversation, and not that it's just the side goal of if they can figure something out in the next year. But that we actually see if this is remotely possible and they're legitimately interested before we just blaze our own path.
So Megan, are you suggesting some joint meetings, or I mean, I'd like to try and get it resolved in, you know, have some serious discussions in the next few months versus the next few years.
Right. I mean, clearly we need to move forward quickly, but I'm going to somewhat rely on Rachel and Will of what the best format is of, I don't know how to have this conversation with the county. But it feels like we need to actually figure that out and give it a real shot before we just give up on it.
Yeah. So I've already talked very conceptually with Jeff that if we wanted to add their space program into ours, and when we bid out preliminary design, would the county be willing to put money into that? And he said, you know, we weren't talking dollars yet, but he said conceptually, yes. So that's very much an option to run concurrently, so we don't waste any time, where the city and the Urban Renewal Agency pays for the portion of a architect to build what we need, and then the county chips in the marginal extra money to build what would be to do a preliminary design on what would be a joint facility. That's a possibility.
Just for design, though, you're talking just design.
Preliminary design and cost estimation.
And is that based on, you know, we set our needs, they said theirs, and we don't look at anything about, like, is there, you know, shared space of maybe they only need one community room between the two of us and not two? Or are we just saying this is what they need and we're not going to talk about sharing?
No, not at all. We're not going to take their 56 and our 13 and say that we need, okay, it's too late for that.
I'll get where you're going.
Yeah. The point is, yeah, we'll share a Sallyport.
69.
we'll see. I mean, the elevator is, yeah, we'll give a, if we go that route, we'll give a critical look to what would be all the shared spaces.
And you're talking about a modern courthouse in addition?
That's, yes, I asked Jeff, I said, I asked him if they would be interested at all in sheriff only. That's got to be sheriff and court. And the reason for that is because their courthouse is in such bad condition. It's really, it's an enormous hazard for anyone who has to work in there. And he needs to get folks out of that building.
Might be worst in the state, if I recall a previous meeting.
It is.
So if there was a structure that large, then the courthouse and where the sheriff is now wouldn't be there. And so that might conceptually become parking, T. tiered parking or something like that.
Yeah, I don't want to make news or like start.
All right. Well, I'm just saying we still need, wherever it is, we still need parking. So, and we kind of kept talking about the lot across in Full Sail for that. And if something else is going down there, then we got to figure out some other place for it. That's all I'm saying, wherever that might be. Okay. Mark?
So we keep using the words preliminary design, but it seems like we have concepts that are all over the map. I mean, so if the courthouse site is open and that's the most valuable piece of property in all of downtown because it has a view, so putting a parking lot there would be insanely bad decision, I think. But so if we're talking a concept cooperatively, we have to have a concept defined before we talk about preliminary design. And I don't see how we can say, hey, you have to be on the bus in a month or not on the bus in a month for the county. That just doesn't make sense to me. I'm hip to saying, hey, if you're really serious, let's both put in some money to do a concept design thing and redo, you know, at the cartoon level that you've been doing, which I think is really nice, to relook at that with this new mission plan of added parking plus police plus county equals, you know, something really big and something really important. But saying preliminary design means we have a concept and we have a site and now we're going to do a drawing. So I'm just not seeing that we're there. So
Mark, are you saying if we still need the parking and maybe the best place to replace everything is the courthouse site, is the city police, the sheriff, and the courthouse all being on the courthouse site potentially? Or the city police, the courthouse, and the sheriff's office all being on public works on 18th, or, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying if we're gonna redesign everything and put it all together, then we may go back to some other completely different site.
Yeah, if we're going to 60,000 square feet, then it's a different horse, right?
Right, and maybe you'd even talk about the site that's on 30th and, or down by the red carpet. I don't know what the name of it is. Because it's big, it's a big piece of land. You might even talk about that piece.
Red carpet and county courthouse, that's pretty funny. That's a good one.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it's a big piece of land. I mean, if we're gonna go big and we're gonna involve the county, then maybe we just need to be starting over at looking at all the sites. I'm just not, you know, we've kind of gone down this road and spent quite a bit of money as a city doing all this analysis for what we need and looking at all the sites we need, and now kind of adding them in on the end when we don't really know for sure if they're, I mean, we're ready. We're kind of thinking about a bond. We've visited all these places and they haven't done any of that yet. So I don't know how serious they are or how, I guess, you know, if we could find out if they really want to go to do all that, that's fine. But
could we ask staff to see how serious the county is, and would they be willing to, you know, get to the same concept level that we got to in the next, you know, 3-4 months kind of thing? And if they weren't, then maybe the decision is to keep going with what we were doing, which is police department and structure, and then preliminary design could be applicable.
Mayor, councilors, absolutely. We can do, you know, we can continue to have conversations with the county. Ultimately, this is going to be a question put before the governing boards. So if there are conversations that you have with your peers, you know, at the county level, that could also be really helpful to help, you know, us understand where the county is as a board. But we will certainly do our part to have those conversations at the staff level. Again, we know that this has come up, and so we just wanted to let you know that we've been having these conversations. But you know, that's all they are at this point. So we're hoping to move forward with this facility to help address some of the parking needs, so that you know, the community has a modern facility to meet all the various needs that you have all talked about today.
So I have an idea, and I'm just going to throw this out and see what you guys think about this. So if staff wants to continue conversations with the county staff on this, and if we could each, or you know, there's more of us than there is county commissioners, but we've done this before on other subjects, we could each take, if you know a counselor or a county commissioner that you could call, and you could say, you know, we're working on this thing, we're thinking you guys might want to be involved, you know, just take the temperature, just tell them what we're talking about, and take their temperature and see what you think, what they think, just on a personal conversation type thing. They're not making an official decision yet at all, but just, you know, see what their thoughts are about the possibility. So what do you guys think about that? Maybe trying to do that, and we could each take, or some of us could take a person that we're gonna contact. I see a few head nods. Okay. That's okay with you, Rachel? I mean, just constituent to constituent, elected to elected kind of thing.
Absolutely. And if there's an interest in having this conversation, we can have a public meeting and have a joint meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's just like I say, we're not gonna build consensus behind doors. A counselor will contact a commissioner, let them know what we're talking about, and just get their thoughts. That's all we're gonna do. We're not having a bunch of us meeting together about this. So I will contact Karen, who wants to take some.
Not your husband.
No. I could. I think somebody else should do that.
I'll take Rich.
Okay. All right.
I can call Bobby.
Eric, you'll take who?
Bobby.
Bob. Okay.
I'll take Les.
Okay.
I can do Mike.
You'll do Mike. Okay.
Mayor, if I may?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think the discrete next step to discuss with them would be a new contract with an architect because they have an existing space program, fully fleshed out just like ours.
Okay.
Program. So I think the discrete project would be to have architects combine them into one, and then to do site test fits like how we've done for a joint facility.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think, you know, some of this, you know, that's almost getting into the weeds a little bit more than we might want to just, you know, throw the idea about where we are with what we're doing and see where they are with what they're doing more than, you know, kind of getting down in the weeds. But if you guys get into a longer conversation, that's a great thing to talk about. All right.
And so we'll make sure that the county manager is aware of the discreet ask.
Okay, great. So I think we're a little bit on hold on this until we kind of maybe if we can have those conversations before our next meeting, that would be great. So did you want anything else from us, or because we're just going to kind of put it on hold until we have a little bit of conversation with them? Is that what we're thinking? I think that's where we are.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Report from officers.
Thank you, Mayor. I know that Wade has an item.
Go ahead, Wade.
Wade?
Yes, Yes, I've got an update on the waterfront storm system. The first phase is out for bid and the bid opening is this Thursday. The construction schedule is pretty tight because, you know, we'll be going into the wet weather soon. So I feel like I need to ask for a special session on Monday the 31st to review and approve a contract. If you're open to that, 5 o'clock, just short presentation.
Okay. Can people do that? August 31st at 5?
That works.
Okay, I've got Jessica, yes.
I'm a no, I'm afraid.
You're gone?
Gladys is a yes.
Okay.
You can call in from anywhere now, Mark.
Yeah, where will I be? I could. You know, I could actually be in the same rest stop that I was in when I joined a meeting from the middle of Utah last time I did that.
Sounds fun.
So we can put that as a maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
Great. And counselors, just it occurred to me, if we have more information on the economic, the CARES Act allocation, we will certainly report back to you at that meeting. Not to make this a long special meeting, but okay. Would be a good opportunity if we have additional information to
okay, great. Tim and Eric, are you looking okay? Eric says yes.
Looks good right now.
Okay, great. All right, Wade, we'll put it on our calendars for the 31st, and that's 5 p.m. versus 6, so 5 o'clock, an hour earlier.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I'm getting the read from the special session, but we're planning to get phase one done this fall?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you, Wade.
Anything else from department heads? Chief Holste?
I have nothing, Mayor.
Okay. Chief Damien?
I have nothing either, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. And is Dustin on?
Hi, Mayor.
Oh, there you are.
Hi, Dustin. I have nothing to report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dustin. All right. City Recorder, transient lodging tax.
Your Honor, I'd like to entertain a motion for the second and final reading ordinance 2055 by title only.
Do I have someone to move that?
I move that.
Okay, Jessica has moved.
I'll second.
Moved, and Megan has seconded that.
Okay, Councilor Meadow?
Aye.
Councilor Rivera?
Yes.
Councilor Haney?
I will abstain for the reasons indicated before. This may be just an abundance of caution, but I have an indirect business relationship with an entity affected by this. If it was a closer vote, I might be able to do it, but I'm just in an abundance of caution, we'll abstain.
All right, thank you. Councilor Saunders?
Yes.
Councilor Cunahan?
Aye.
Councilor Zanmiller?
Yes.
Your Honor?
Yes.
Ordinance 2055, an ordinance amending Title V of the Hood River Municipal Code by amending Chapter 9, retitled Transient Lodging Tax.
Great. Second reading. So that will go into effect in 30 days, Jennifer, or will that go into effect right away?
In 30 days, Your Honor.
30 days. Okay. Thank you so much. Mayor call. So in your packet, you can see let me see if we got this in here. A letter of support for the warming shelter. So I don't know, Sarah, do you, Sarah Kellums, I see you're still on the line. Thank you so much for sticking with us all this time. But I'd like to sign this letter of support for Mid-Columbia Community Action Council. And so, Sarah, if you might want to talk a little bit about this program. I think you've given us a little bit of information, but what this support letter does. If you can put Sarah on so she can speak.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Thank you. So this funding request has been developed jointly by us here at Hood River Shelter Services, along with shelter providers in Wasco County. We were invited by MCAC to apply for the Emergency Solutions Grant COVID Round 1 funding to support winter warming shelter services in both the Dalles and Hood River. And because MCAC serves also Sherman County, we're explicitly communicating this with Sherman County providers and residents and inviting community members from Sherman County who may be in need to access shelter services in either the Dalles or Hood River as urban centers. So these funds would be used for support of non-congregant shelter. And it is, as I understand, a non-competitive process by invitation for our two communities to apply. Just finally, I'd like to share that Providence has provided another letter of support from our Hood River side. And then in the Dalles, both the City of the Dalles and three area churches have provided letters of support to accompany our application. Do you have any questions in particular? So this is would be one piece of our emergency funding packet, and it would be the first piece that we hope to have granted, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Megan? Megan. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Megan.
Well, so I, your letter to us for the conversation earlier tonight was for 5 of the 15 sites. Would this cover another 5 or the other 10 or some other
yes.
number?
So the total funding request to MCAC is for $90,000 and $45,000 of that, if awarded in full, would be coming to our community. And so our top priority for that funding would be the purchase of the initial 5 pallet shelters.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah.
And Sarah, I just wanted to confirm the need for Hood River County only is about 15, is that correct?
That is what we have estimated as our need based on 2 factors. Our overnight average guest count last year was 19 guests per night. And so, however, in severe weather events in prior years, we've had nights of much higher guest counts. And we believe that 15 shelters will allow us to meet that need for a surge capacity for severe weather events. However, we really cannot identify the need that may arise specifically due to COVID and the end of the eviction moratorium. And so I just want to underscore here the importance of the other work that you're prioritizing with utility assistance. And I hope that all of us can make our community aware of the rental relief supports that are also available through the Housing Authority, because I am very concerned about first-time homelessness in our community.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you, Sarah. Other questions for Sarah? So anyway, thank you so much, Sarah, for sticking with us all this time. I'd like to, if you guys are good with it, I want to just sign this letter of support that, you know, they should get this funding and that we support that idea.
Support it, yeah.
Okay. I see thumbs up coming around. So thank you, everyone.
Mayor?
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
One small suggestion, and this just reveals that I just don't know this world, but when I saw this letter, I didn't know what MCAC was. Maybe we could at least spell that out, because it just...
Oh, okay.
This was unclear to me who this even was.
Yeah, Mid-Columbia Community Action Council. And they do, you know, a lot of work for homeless and just all sorts of I think they do some rent relief. They do utility relief, a lot of different things like that.
Thank you.
You know, the very most vulnerable people in our community, that's who they work with all the time. Great, let's see. I've got this, a couple more things. Let me make notes during the... So on September 8th, the county has a meeting, and I believe that's a Tuesday, and that's a work session for the county, and they're going to have Trish from the health department there, and I think it's not 100% confirmed yet, but I think it's about 99% confirmed. And I've talked to Mike Oates to see if he thought it was a good idea, and he said he did, that we would be invited as a council. We had one other joint meeting with the county, and this would be to get, you know, firsthand information from the health department for the county and for the city at the same time. So if they have questions or we have questions, we can all hear the answers at the same time. So if you guys are amenable to, you know, trying to make that meeting, it's a Tuesday, and I think it's at 5 o'clock, but I'd have to confirm that exact time. Do you know, Rachel?
No, Mayor, we don't. We'll find out following this meeting and make sure it's noticed and that you have all the information.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to let you know that we were trying to, so that Trish doesn't have to try and present the information twice. And we might have questions they don't have. They might have questions we don't have. So just to kind of get us all on the same page with where we are with COVID, you know, with the information from the health department, then, you know, we're trying to set up a meeting so everybody can sit down together. I don't think there won't be any time for us to be doing stuff regarding the parking structure, but if we can talk to our respective people in the meantime, you know, it's just another thing to have a conversation about. So that'd be great if we can do that. I think that's it. Rachel, are we getting, I actually asked Mike Oates too, if he could ask the health department if we could get maybe, you know, 5 bullet points on where we are with COVID every week so that we just kind of know what's happening, because we aren't having the emergency operations center meetings anymore. And I know Rachel's been getting some information from the Joint Information Center still and sending us what she gets on that. But Mike was going to ask if Jeff and the health department whether we could just get a bullet point thing from Mike Matthews, who's been doing those reports previously. So that's in the
works. I'm happy to follow up. Yeah, I'm happy to follow up, Mayor. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of one of the things that I thought was important, that we get numbers right now. That's all I've got. Tim?
Sorry, I had a hard time finding my unmute button, but I really don't have anything this week. Thank you for setting up the meeting with the county and doing all of that. I appreciate that, Mayor.
Okay. Gladys?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I will continue to remind folks to wear their masks. We are on the governor's watch list, so please, please make sure that you are wearing a mask when you are out in public, that you are washing your hands, that you're trying to maintain 6 feet, and if not, your mask will help you with that. Please, please continue to wear your mask. And if you're out traveling, remember that you are a visitor in somebody else's community, so continue to wear a mask even out there.
Thank you, Gladys. Jessica?
I don't have an update except that we skipped over the visitor advisory. Oh,
sorry. I'm so sorry I did that. Do you want to do that?
I can, how about if I lead it off and then we go to Megan next and she can jump
in.
I don't have other updates. Folks hopefully saw the press release that Rachel sent out on the change, but essentially as a result of income loss at the chamber and the Visit Hood River committee, they've decided to combine into one entity with much reduced staffing. Kate Schroeder's gone from the chamber. Ashley Huckabee Mays, the interim executive director, and there's another halftime person. I think Megan, Rachel, and I are going to have a conversation to talk about how does ongoing city involvement look like for that entity, because Rachel had been on the board for the chamber and Megan and I have been on the board for Visit Hood River, which doesn't exist really anymore. It's called Experience Hood River is the new name of the entity. And Megan,
not a ton more details, but the two boards met this last week as kind of the first meeting to figure out basically what the new entity will look like. There's obviously some work to figure out there. They're planning to meet every other week for the foreseeable future to kind of work through what this will be. Jessica's correct, and we'll figure out how the city wants to fit into that. They are kind of within that, working through what they will do or be. There are some surveys out to stakeholders trying to figure out what the community wants or needs from kind of a chamber visit group. So they're getting some feedback as well. I think in a month or two, we can have a much better update of what everything will be.
Thank you so much.
Should I jump into my?
Yeah. Did you have, first of all, Jessica, did you have anything else? Okay. Go ahead, Megan, do your council call.
Kind of tied together, but I, attended the county meeting, via, you know, this, but, last Monday, and they, were getting an update from Trish about COVID and, you know, we're phase one and there's definitely still issues with testing lag times. And I think the positivity rate had been going up and certainly seemed like there were concerns that things were not going great. And so I talked a little bit with Jessica and Ashley about this of, I think there's some local messaging about we're not doing that great and everyone should wear a mask and distance and everything Gladys said. But also maybe coming back around to some tourism messaging through the Visit Hood River folks of kind of making sure people are aware that there is a responsibility when you visit to help this community do better, because we really don't want to be going backwards. So I, assuming that's not a red flag for all of you, I'm going to see if we can get some of that out. And then I'm seeing head nods, so thank you. Just other quick things, just of interest since I was at the county meeting of they did some changes to the community ID program that I think will make it a little easier for folks to have the correct documents approved, which should be good news for our support for that. I think there was a press release out, but they did buy some property to hopefully expand Tucker Park, which is interesting. And then I assume you guys also got some messages in your inbox, but they had a conversation about the upcoming election and ballot boxes in unincorporated areas, which I don't think resolved anything, but was definitely interesting. They're looking into what that would entail and if it's possible or not. So that's all I have.
Thanks, Megan. Eric?
Thank you, Mayor. The only thing I'll mention is in reference to my continuing role as the Hood River City Council member of the ODOT ACT committee. That committee meets about once every 6 weeks or so. And just so everyone remembers, the role of the ACT committee is to be a public advisory board to the Oregon Transportation Committee, which is the big cheese as it concerns transportation in Oregon. So there's a movement afoot by the Hood River County delegation, including Chair Oates, Jess Groves from Cascade Locks, and a number of other folks to sign a letter directed to the Oregon Transportation Committee, pointing out what I have reported to you guys numerous times, which is that Hood River County is just coming up short with the way dollars are allocated. And Kathy Fitzpatrick of McKed is involved with this. So there's going to be this letter that'll probably go out soon. If anyone wants to look at it or be involved, like Rachel or whoever, that'd be fine. But a division is just for the Hood River County members of this committee to just voice the concern that the way things are structured now, Hood River being with the urban but not having the traffic throughput, kind of puts us at a structural disadvantage for the way they do their calculations to get monies. And so now where ODOT funding is going to go with COVID, the dip in people's incomes, the dip in people buying gas, I'm not sure. I'm not holding my breath that this will actually solve our problem, but shame on us for not trying.
Thanks, Eric.
Mark?
Well, I don't have much. I will be out of town from the 30th until the 8th. So I should get back late on that Tuesday. We're going to go say goodbye to Ida as a family, and it should be sweet. So.
All right. I think that's it. I don't think we have anything else. So I think we will be adjourned at 9:09. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate the time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.